Okay. Wow. So an eventful trip. What time did you guys get back? 12:30. Okay. Camp time. Yeah, but you woke up on camp time also. Which is, yeah, I get so confused. I keep standing people up for meetings and chavrusas and things because I keep getting confused with camp time and city time. I hate it. That's the worst. Anyway. Yeah.
I was wondering, is it better to daven on a bus via fetus before Chatzos HaLaila, or with the, like, sitting down, or with the minion, like, standing after Chatzos HaLaila? That's what I was wondering last time.
Good question. Why did that tefillah was after?
It was at 1:40 PST.
Yeah, that's probably after Chatzos, I would imagine. Yeah. Probably better to daven before. I'm not sure. Okay, no. No one got Rabbi Rosen was on a plane at the time. You couldn't get a hold of the camp rabbi. Okay. No, that should be the worst thing you ever do. Okay. Rabbi Levin's coming today.
Really?
Yes. Okay. You didn't see the sign? There's a sign right on the door with his picture. He's coming. He's going to be here for a while, apparently, because he's going to be here for Mincha at 4 o'clock with the Masmidim. And then he's giving a shir to the Masmidim right after. And then he's giving a shir to counselors, apparently, at 10:15 tonight. So... Masmidim teen, there should be.
Exactly.
What?
Exactly.
I don't know if anyone coordinated with Rabbi Levin about that, but okay, hopefully. I'm thinking about moving him to speak night seder to the Masmidim, 9:15 to 10, instead of, you know, right after Mincha, because I didn't know he's going to be here that late. I just see the sign that apparently he's going to be here really late. So I thought he had to get out of here, but if he's going to be here really late, I might as well have him do a night shiur, you know? So, okay, so I have to reach out to him, we'll see. All right, but anyway, last time, yeah, we have to have shir in 25 minutes with the Masmidim, so I'm going to have to, I don't know if we're called Masmidim anymore, because I think they're renaming it today. The program is being, you know, the Kestenbaum family is coming, and yeah. So it's called Kola Levarye. Not after me, the Kestenbaum Zaidi was Aryeh. He's a chashviyid, so they're calling it kolal. So I guess we're not called masvid. We're now a kolal. We're now a kolal. We're now like Morasha and everybody else. We've risen to the level of kolal. Okay, so I have to ask our Brazil about that. Like, we need to change the sweatshirts or something. Okay, so last time we started discussing the inyan of cutting off payas. So you really wanted to talk about beard shaving, right? Not really about payas so much, right? You're the one that requested the topic. Yeah. Okay. we'll see if we get there. So last time we started discussing the reasons for the issur of cutting off the peyos harosh and the peyos hazakan, and today we'll talk a little bit about some of the details of the issur. So the sugya for both of those things at the end is in the end of Masechtos Makos. Makos is one of those underratedly difficult Masechtos. People always try to finish Makos for their bar mitzvah, or you learn Makos in seventh grade. I don't know. I can't imagine that there is a seventh grader who understands kimu v'lo kimu, bitlu v'lo bitlu, you know, some of those sugyas in the third parak of Makos. There's some lighter, you know, easier topics also, but anyway, at the end of the Masechta, you have a number of halachot. You finished Makos for your bar mitzvah?
I did both those things, seventh grade.
You did both? Seventh grade and bar mitzvah, okay, so you see. Which yeshiva? Sashur, okay, me too, seventh grade. So, I think it was Baba Kama in sixth grade. Rabbi Judowitz, yeah, he's been teaching Makos since, for a long time. So the Gemara Makos and Daf Chaf and Beis tells us that there are two separate isurim of shaving off the payas. There's the isur of makif and the isur of nikif. There's the isur to be the one who is shaving the payas off, and the isur to be the one who is getting his payas shaved off. Meaning, it's not like you could sit in the barber chair, let them do it, and be like, "I didn't do anything." You know, the barber did it all. There's an isur of nikif as well. There's an interesting analysis that Rav Yosef Engel has in Asvanda Raisa of this phenomenon of getting double isurim for playing both roles in an isur. You know, the one who is doing and the one on whom it's due. So if you take a shaver and you shave off your payas, you are both the makif and the nikif, and therefore you're violating two separate isurim. So if you sit in the barber chair, you can even be chayv malkus if you do a maisa, meaning if the barber needs you to you know, to move your head this way, that way, in order to get it right. So then it's a lav sheish b'maisa, and you get malchus for that as well. So the Ritva says, usually misayeya in b'mamish. Usually we have a principle that misayeya in b'mamish, that someone who's just helping a little bit, it's not considered a significant act. But over here, sitting in the barber chair is considered to be and helping and moving your head is considered to be significant, and you're chayv malchus for that. The question is, what if you sit in the barber chair and you sit there like a stone? You don't move. Your mom, so the barber says, move your hair. You figure it out. I'm not moving, right? So then, is it an isra? We know you're not chayv malchus because it's saying b'maisa. But is there an isra at all? So Tosfos, Maseches Bamitzia, and Dav Yud, and the Ritva and Malchus and Dav Chaf Aleph both say that in order to be chayv malchus, you have to move your head. You know, then you'd be chayv malchus as a nikif. But sitting in the barber chair is still an isra d'oraisa. You just don't get malchus for it because it's a lav she'in b'maisa. Meaning that's a big discussion. Also, how do we define what's a lav she'in b'maisa? Does lav she'in b'maisa mean that this time I didn't do an action? Does it mean that this does it mean that it's the kind of isra that is possible to violate without an action? The kind of isra that I, in fact, violated without an action, or the kind of isser that must always be violated without an action. That by definition, its violation means no action. But anyway, they seem to assume that it depends on whether you do an action or not. So if you do the action by moving your head around, you chayv malchus. Otherwise, it's an isser d'oraisa. Now, this is not pashut at all. There's a Maram Shik in Sefer HaMitzvos, Mitzvah Reish Nun Beis. Maram Shik wrote his own commentary on Sefer HaMitzvos. Anyone know who Maram Shik was? Maram Shik was a Talmud of, probably the leading Talmud of the Chasam Sofer. Right? I guess you could argue the Ksav Sofer also, his son was the leading Talmud. But the Maram Shik was certainly among the leading Talmudim of the Chasam Sofer. So if you buy a set of Shalos Tshuvos Maram Shik, there are two volumes of Shas and Shuvas and one volume of Sefer HaMitzvos. It's almost like a Minchas Chinuch type of Sefer where he goes mitzvah by mitzvah and has like a little bit of lamdas and a little bit of ha'aros on each mitzvah. Now, someone bought for me a couple of years ago, they reprinted the Sefer HaMitzvos as a separate volume in much nicer print and with footnotes and everything. A beautiful, beautiful Sefer. Never quite took the got the popularity of the Minchas Chinuch. It's not quite the Minchas Chinuch, but it's really nice. So the Maram Shik writes that in the view of the Rambam, there's no isra at all if you're just sitting there like a stone. It's not that it's a lav she'in b'maisa, it's not a lav at all. The Maram Shik brings a raya to this based on the Gemara in Maseches Nazir. Nazir daf nun zayinim beis, that Rav Huna used to have his wife cut his kids' payas off. Neither the woman nor the child are included in the isra of shaving off the payas, but there's an isra generally to provide a child with an isra daraisa. Meaning, you could say, well, that's not a raya to anything. The fact that the woman cut the kid's payas off, because the woman's not chayiv in payas rosh, the kid is not chayiv in anything, so there should be no problem at all. That's not a raya to what the nature of the isra is. But there is a separate isra called dos achilim, that you're not allowed to provide a child with an isra daraisa. Like if you have a child who's a kohen, you're not allowed to walk him into a cemetery, right? You're not allowed to, if you have non-kosher food, you're not allowed to feed it to a child, right? Even though leaving aside the issue of timtum alev and the issue of chinuch, there is this issue of dos achilim, that you're not allowed to provide a child with an isra daraisa. So Ram Shik explains that in the view of the Rambam, the kid isn't doing anything that could be called an isser, because he's not moving his head. So you're not helping him do an isser. He's not doing anything. And even if he were to move his head, as long as the woman doesn't prompt him to move his head, she is not violating any isser. So Ram Shik assumes that the Rambam disagrees with the Ritva and Tosfos, and holds that if you do nothing, you're not in violation of any isser. There is a beautiful sefer called Darkei Tshuva. Are you familiar with the Darkei Tshuva at all? Should I stop asking that question every time I quote a sefer? The Darkei Tshuva was the Munkacher Rebbe, one of the Munkacher Rebbes. So what he did was he collected like all of the later poskim that have something to say about halachos in Yerideya, and he organize them. I'll be the Seder of Yerideya, the Seder of Shulchan Aruch. So they say actually that the Rav Shechter told us that the writing of the Darkei Tshuva was, he made it like a yeshiva-wide project. in his yeshiva, the Munkacher yeshiva. He didn't write the whole thing. He assigned different seifim and shulchan aruch to different talmidim, and everyone they would do their research and they would put it together. And he was like the general editor of Dark Yeshiva. I never would have noticed such a thing, but Rav Schachter said that that's why sometimes you can see that there are sections of the Dark Yeshiva that are much stronger and some that are a little weaker in terms of the research that was done. He said because in any yeshiva you're going to have the guys who are a little stronger and the guys who are not as strong. So in the Munkacher yeshiva was no different. So since everyone got their assignment, so the ones who... So anyway, so in Darkei Tshuva, in Simukov Peyalev, he says that there is an iser to even passively receive a haircut that cuts off your payas, but he's not sure how serious that iser is. Meaning, it could be a full los asei doraisa, just without an onesh, or it could be part of the broader... more general iser of not following in the derech of the non-Jews of Darkei Hagoyim of Chukos Hagoyim Darkei Amori. If it's that, in that latter category, then it would seem that if you were to have your entire head shaved without moving your head at all, it would not be a violation, because the Darkei Amori, the way the non-Jews would get their haircuts, was dafka about leaving a nice big chup on top of their head. But if you end up not looking like that, you end up just shaving your head entirely, then it would not be a violation of any yisr. However, the Darkei Tshuva assumes that really more likely the former, the first way of understanding is correct, that that it is a violation of getting a haircut, of cutting off your payas, even if you're not moving at all. It's just that you don't get malchus. And therefore, he says, a person is not allowed to allow a non-Jew to shave your head, even in a situation where doing so would save you from a lot of humiliation for whatever reason, whatever the case may be, where there's going to be a lot of busha involved. You're not allowed to do it. It's an isser daraisa. Shaving the head became like a fad. A lot of people do that. A lot of people have difficulty coming to grips with the fact that they're balding, so they take control of the situation and they shave their head entirely. So we have to see if there's any heter. So far it doesn't seem that way. Even if you go to a non-Jewish barber and you have them shave your head, according to most Rishonim and Achronim, it's an isser daraisa. It's an isser daraisa. If you help and you move your head, then it's an isser daraisa that you get malchus for. What's the nafkamina between an isser daraisa and an isser daraisa that you get malchus for? Any nafkamina la halacha? So, I mean, the obvious nafkamina is you get malchus, but nafkamina la halacha nowadays. We don't give malchus nowadays. Why do we not give malchus nowadays? Sounds like so much fun. Why don't we do it? So, I'm just joking. It doesn't sound like fun, but what? We don't have smicha. You need a basin. You don't need a sanhedrin. You need a basin of smuchim. You need people to have not like, what do you mean? Rabbi, you run the smicha program. No, I run the heter hora'a program in Yeshiva University. I don't really run it, whatever. I'm involved in the heter hora'a program in Yeshiva University. I direct it. I don't know what my title is, but real smicha, ishmi piyish from Moshe Rabbeinu, so that we don't have anymore, so we can't give malchus anymore. But it's so what's the real difference nowadays? We're not going to give malchus anyway. So the real difference nowadays is probably legabe psulei edos. The halacha is that if a person regularly violates an iser for which he's pasul edos, for which you'd get malchus, he becomes pasul edos. This is fascinating, because if you hold that a person gets malchus for getting a haircut where he shaves his head, then be careful who your edim are on your ksuba, your kedushin, because it could be it's psula edus, right? Because they're constantly violating an isur for which they get malchus. If you hold that it's not an isur daraisa, so we're going to have to see that it's not a chiyuv malchus, even if it is an isur daraisa, they may not be psula edus. It's a major question, right? One has to be aware of this. In fact, I'm just going to share this morning to the Masmidim about who's kosher to be on a Beis Din for Geirus. So what difference does it make who's kosher? I'm sure we always pick good rabbis to be on a Beis Din for Geirus, right? Meaning, I'm sure they're always kosher. Yeah, sometimes we think we picked good rabbis, and then after the fact we find out that they weren't so good. So now what do you do with the hundreds of Geirim that they were on the Beis Din for? And the rabbi was caught, you know, installing cameras in the shower room of the mikveh, let's say. Actually happened. It's not, I didn't make it up, right? So now what? Now you're going to go to the hundreds of Geirim that were converted and say that they're all not Jewish because the Dayan is possible. So one of the heterim that they came up with in order to allow for the geirus to be valid is that whatever they did was not psulei, was not something that would pasulim le'edus midaraisa. Because, you know, voyeurism is terrible, and it's not a good thing, and he went to jail for it and everything else. You don't get malchus for it. You don't get malchus for it. Why don't you get malchus for it? You don't get malchus for estakles. There's no malchus for such a thing. So if you don't get malchus for it, it could be that it doesn't pass. It's at least not l'mafreya. Mikan l'haba, the level of chil Hashem and everything else, it would definitely be possible him to serve as a dayan, but at least not l'mafreya. Yeah. No, lav shem ma'aser is ein lokan lav. You don't get malchus. Question is, over here, if you're moving your head, you're doing a ma'aser. The question, right? So we're saying is that if you're going to move your head, you're doing a ma'aser, so it's malchus. If you're not going to move your head, it's a machlokas, whether it's no iser at all or it's an iser daraisa, just lav shem ma'aser, but no malchus. So we assume it's a lav shem ma'aser and no malchus. But most of the time, people are moving their head, so that would involve malchus. There is a discussion, what if the barber is a female barber? So Shulchan Aruch asks a woman from cutting off a man's or even a child's face, right? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger suggests that the whole Isser is only an Isser of the Fnei Iver. If the person is able to shave their own face, but prefers to go to a barber to cut their face, then it could be that the barber is not in violation of the Fnei Iver, but is in violation of what's the aver if the person could do it on their own and you're just helping them do it? Lifnei iver d'oraisa is only if they can't do it on their own and you're enabling them to do it. So if they can do it on their own and you're just helping them do it, that's what we call misayeya midraban. That's a violation midraban of misayeya ude over avera. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger though has a chiddush. He says if a woman shaves a man's pais, she's not in violation of misayeya either. Because the other option was that he would have shaved his payas himself. And if he would have shaved his payas himself, he'd be in violation of what? Let's say he would take a razor shave off his payas himself, he'd be in violation of? How many surim?
Two.
Midaraisa. Makif and Nikif. When she shaves his payas off, he's in violation of only one. So in a certain sense, she's saving him. Meaning, lifnei iver is when you do something to a person that makes their avera, that aids them in making their avera worse. Lifnei iver means you're helping them, stumble. You're lifnei iver l'sitein mishal. You're putting a stumbling block. She's not putting a stumbling block, says Rabbi Akiva Eiger. He would have violated two isurim. She's helping him by making him only violate one isur. Now that is a fascinating comment of Rabbi Akiva Eiger because that has major ramifications. That means if you help someone do an avera, but their other option would have been a worse avera, then you're not in violation of lifnei iver. Can you think of examples of that? You help someone do an avera, but had you not helped them, their other option would have been a much worse avera. Allowing what? Telling a single girl to go to the mikveh. Because you're allowing her to go to the mikveh in order to have premarital relations. But if you don't do that, they're going to do it anyway, and it's going to be in a sirkaris of nida. And now at least she's not a nida. Good. Now the reason we don't do that, the reason we don't allow that, is for a public policy issue. Meaning you're right. If on an individual basis, that is the right call. Better to let her go to the mikveh. But can you imagine what kind of public policy statement that would be? And, it would just be terrible. I mean, we don't have to express, what that would mean in terms of high school relationships and the like and things like that. And, what kind of statement we'd be making and with the level of preachers that would, result in. That's a public policy issue. But on an individual level, I know of a particular posek, Major Gadol, who was asked by a woman who grew up from, who had then become a zona, mamish. Mm-hmm. So she asked a shaila, should she go to the mikveh? So he said, probably, meaning as on an individual basis, put on a wedding band and a shaitel and then pretend to be married and go. And they're not going to stop you if they think that you're married. But as on a communal basis, to make such a psak would be terrible. Let's think of something a little less salacious than that. Is there any other example where you help someone do an avera, but you're really preventing them from a bigger avera? We're not going down that road. I mean, that you have to spend a month in Masmidim learning Geiris to. That's actually going to be Shir, I think, on Sunday or Monday. We're going to have Shir about that in Masmidim, about that. If someone's converting for the sake of marriage, so can Beis Din do such a conversion if there's a chashash that the Kabbalah's mitzvah is not really sincere or whatever? Okay, that's a big topic. We're not getting into that. But here are the more common examples. I just got a shaila this morning from a Rav in Florida. He said that someone wants to invite non-religious guests to their Friday night su'uda, but they're pretty sure that even when they offer to let them stay over, that they'll drive home. So are you allowed to do that? So you're enabling them or putting them in a position where they're going to be driving home. And what would their Friday night look like without you? Right? So it would be much worse, l'chora. They'd be driving somewhere else, to a club, to a bar, to whatever, and then driving. So it could be that it's not, there are probably other reasons in that case, but it could be that it's not l'fnei for that reason. Or if Shlomo Zalman Orbach had a famous psak, let's say you have, it's a hot summer day, and you have movers that are helping, you know, schlepping furniture and moving, whatever, can you offer them a drink of water? The Shulchan Aruch says that you're not allowed to give food or drink to someone who's not going to recite a bracha, because it's lefnei iver. You're giving them food or drink, and they're not going to say a bracha, it's lefnei iver l'sitei michshol. So what about that case? So Shlomo Zalman says, well, if you don't give them a drink of water, it's going to be lefnei iver in hating all from Jews, because they're such not nice people that they can't even offer a drink of water to a shvitzi worker who's working hard for them. So what's better, that they violate the issue of not saying a bracha, that they violate hating all from Jews, and you know the level of sinna that would create? Or for example, Rav Avadia Yosef as a tshuva. Let's say you have a fleishiger restaurant in a neighborhood where it's the only kosher restaurant, it's the only available kosher food option, and people there are not so religious. Can you keep the fleishig restaurant open during the 9 days and serve fleishigs? It was before they came up with the shtick of having a siyum every night in a restaurant. That was before Klal Yisrael got so smart. This is when we were still, this is like back in the 1970s when we were still stupid. We didn't realize that you could just do that. So can you keep the fleishig restaurant open? So Avadia Yosef thought, for sure you can, because otherwise you're going to be machshel people. What's the other option? That they're going to be eating non-kosher food. So better to violate the minhag of not eating meat during the 9 days, which, by the way, for Sfardim doesn't exist. It's only during Shavuot Shechalbo, but even that's only a minhag. What's the din? What's the ikra din, the halacha? That you're not allowed to eat meat at the Suda Mafsekes, the Suda before Tisha B'Av. That's when you're not allowed to eat meat. But to eat meat during the nine... Although this year, no such din, right? Because this year... that Suda is Shalosh Shudas, because Tisha B'Av is on Sunday, right? So there's no classic Suda Mefsekes this year. But anyway, so this is a very, very important comment of Rabbi Kiva Eger. Just one last thing, and then we'll call it a day. The Rama in Kuf Pei Aleph says that a non-Jew can shave a kid's peis off, and because neither the child nor the barber is chayiv in the mitzvah. So Pesachei Teshuvah says, what? If it's a case where a kid goes to the barber on his own, then obviously there's no issue. The kid is just doing his own thing. Even if a child eats non-kosher food, no adult other than the parent has to stop him from doing that. Ein beis din mitzvah l'afrisho. The child receiving a normally usher haircut would be the same as that. Ein beis din mitzvah l'afrisho. But if an adult asked the non-Jewish barber to cut the kid's hair in that way, so that would seem to be no different than any other case of an iser of, what's the iser? You're not allowed to do something. If you ask a non-Jewish barber to do it, that's Amir al-Akum. Amir al-Akum is not only in Hilchah Shabbos. anything you're not allowed to do, you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do. So if the kid has his own money, he has his own job, he's a child star in Hollywood or something, and he has his own bank account, say he goes to the barber and he asks him to do it, it's okay, so then the Rambam might be... But how often does that happen? Most often if a kid is getting a haircut, it's because the parent is paying the barber to give the kid the haircut. So then the barber becomes like the shliach of the parent, and it becomes like a violation of Amir Lakum. So Pesach Tshuva is very confused by that Rambam. What I want to talk about next time, which will... not be tomorrow because I have to go home for Shabbos, but I guess on Sunday is a Sunday. What's our schedule with the fast day? But there should be chinuch at some point, right? Must be sometime that we get to learn. So on Sunday, I want to talk about where on the head your payas are. A lot of people get confused by this, by where the pay. They think it's like only right here, but it's bigger. So where on the head a person's payas are, and like how wide the payas have to be, how long they have to be, all of those issues. I bet we'll get to that on Sunday. Okay.